Hi everyone, this is Catherine and welcome to the First Times Summer Series in which we are revisiting some of our most popular and favourite episodes. As you'll already know if you've listened to the Season 6 finale, Kate and I are taking a break from the First Time in its current format in 2024. But don't delete the feed just yet. I will be back in March with something new and slightly different. It'll still feature interviews with writers, but there'll be other creatives, comedians and entrepreneurs involved as well. One last thing before we get into this particular interview. To celebrate 6 seasons of the podcast and to kick off the coach salting work I'm doing for writers this year, I'm posting a series about what I've learned on the podcast, particularly about interviewing and being interviewed these past few years on Instagram. You can check it out at Catherine Collette Writer. I'll put a link in the show notes. This is the First Time podcast,
where we talk writing, publishing, and all of the feels.
It's conversations between us
and conversations with Australian and international authors about their craft, their books, and the writing life. I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to the First Time podcast, Season 6. This podcast was recorded and produced on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri and Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures. Okay, so this show is called The First Time, and the reason for that is we like to start at the very beginning. So have you always been a writer?
Before I was a writer, I was a reader, I would say. As a kid, my brothers were really into sports. My parents were really into sports. I got dragged to lots of sporting events and my brothers playing every sport, whatever. And so I would just bring a book because I was bored. So I started reading a lot at a young age. And then the first thing I can ever think of wanting to be was a writer. So
Do you remember the first time you saw your words in print?
Oh my God. This is the worst story ever. So when I graduated from college, I started an MFA program in creative writing. And that summer I needed a job. And so I applied to, this is how long ago it was. It was the year 2000. I took the alternative paper and I applied for literally every job in the back of it. And one of the two I heard back from was the gay newspaper. I lived in Washington, D.C. at the time. And so I went and interviewed for the job and I ended up getting the job at this newspaper. And one of my first duties at the newspaper was doing obituaries. And this was kind of the tail end of the worst of the AIDS epidemic. So, we were running lots of obituaries. And we had this form that you'd have people fill out and whatever. And so I'm learning how to be a reporter and do all this stuff, whatever. And so the first time I saw my words in print, it was someone's obituary. And I had actually gotten the spelling of his last name wrong. And I laugh about it now. But yeah, it was awful. And I can't believe I didn't get fired right then and there. But some very, very patient lesbians taught me some lessons about accuracy and journalism on that day, let me tell you.
Oh my God, and, I never got a name wrong or misspelled.
I know, now I always, even if your name is Jack Smith, I'm like, will you please spell your name for me? That's the first question. And yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. I want to start talking to you about recapping of TV shows, because aside from obituaries, I know that this has been a really big part of your career. You've recapped The Real Housewives for 10 years. Is that right?
Yeah. 10 years at Vulture. I mean, and so it's even longer before that. So yeah, a really long time.
Okay, so our listenership is quite varied. So I'm going to ask you to explain two seemingly obvious things. Can you tell us what is The Real Housewives and what is recapping?
So The Real Housewives is a franchise of shows about women between their late 30s and late 50s. in different cities around America and the world, really. Melbourne has one of the best housewives ever. Yeah, and it's about the sort of interpersonal dynamics between a group of women, professional women, usually with families and usually with the trappings of wealth, I would say. And yeah, there's lots of fights, lots of drama, but also lots of fun, lots of bonding, togetherness, female friendships, all that stuff. And but it's all done with a knowing kind of wink of like, we love this thing, but we also know it's ridiculous, which is what I think is great about it. And so recapping, I mean, the first I saw it, you know, really started in 2000 with the kind of reality television watershed in America that was Survivor, the first season of Survivor. And, you know, people were just writing about what happened on the episode, usually with some opinion, usually with a strong voice. And it's something that I have found the fans like to use to, you know, it's like you watch this show, you love it, it only lasts an hour, but then you can go and read about it. And so it's like your enjoyment of the show lasts a little bit longer. And usually you get communities coalescing around the recaps to talk about their opinions kind of in concert with the recapper. And yeah, and so I've done it, lots of Housewives, but lots of other shows. And so now I think of it more as like episodic reviews, like you're doing like a review of kind of each episode. Yeah, so now my strategy is kind of like taking each episode and writing like kind of a essay about what I'm seeing going on in terms of the episode, but also the larger context of the show and the reality television world. And oh, it's so highbrow for just writing about reality shows.
That's so interesting, because I think there is this, I mean, there are recaps and there are recaps prior to this kind of 2000 period when you thought about TV and the types of articles you would read pre-internet. It was like, you should watch this show or you should not watch this show. Yes. So the advent of this assumption that you have watched this show, let's talk about it, is a pretty interesting one.
No, absolutely. And I think that, yeah, I've done a lot of straight up television criticism in my day, but this is something that's like a little bit different because, yeah, you're talking to people who are already fans of this thing. And yeah, and I found actually that there's a few seasons of American Horror Story that I recapped, which were not good. And the people don't want you to say like, this sucks. Like they want you, you know, they're like on the train. And so, you know, I try to be as critical as I can be, but yeah, it's not always that welcome. I think it's a little bit different with Housewives because, you know, as fans of the franchise, we're all in. And so we're going to be watching whether it's good or it's bad. And so then I can be like, oh, this season is trash. Here's why it's awful. How do we fix it? You know, whatever. And fans engage with that more. Whereas, yeah, usually, especially with like dramas and comedies, people just want you to be like, this is the best. I love it. So, well, yeah.
I mean, it has that sporting analogy is really true, yes. You know, in the same way that people will critique sports or have opinions on this person should be out of the game, this who's on next season. Like, it's a really apt analogy.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, who's having a good season? Who's having a bad season? Who should be traded? Who should be fired? You know? Yeah. And you're like keeping up with your teams and there are certain teams that you follow, but other teams that you don't. And yeah, no, the sporting analogy is like very, very apt. And, you know, people are quick to shit on reality television. And so one of my like great crusades in life is to be like, you know, A, don't tell me the thing that I love is stupid, because I don't tell you the thing that you love is stupid. But if I had to, I mean, reality television never gave anyone a concussion disorder. So maybe we're doing things a little bit better than some other sports are.
So in terms of the recapping, you said you've got a background in criticism. Where you do have criticism embedded in the recaps, what is it or who is it that you are critiquing?
I think that's a good question. And with reality television, it's really interesting. And that's why I find it way more fun to recap reality shows than comedies and dramas, both of which I've done, because you know, when you look at a show like Mad Men, it's like, oh, why did Don Draper do that thing? It's like, oh, Don Draper did that thing because the writers told him to, or, you know, the writers want you to see how and why Don Draper did this thing. When you're watching a reality show, you're like, why did NeNe Leakes do that thing? And you're like, I have no fucking clue. Let's try to figure it out. And so I think it's like critiquing both the way the women behave on the show or other people behave on the show, but also critiquing how production may or may not have been involved, or how it looks like production may or may not have been involved in a way. And also like criticizing, like in terms of the Housewives, like Bravo, like the network that controls it. And it's like, okay, what does Bravo want? What direction are they going in? Is this the right direction or is this the wrong direction? You know, so I think that you get to have like levels of talking about it. And I think that's what makes it fun for people, is that what's crazy about the Housewives universe is we're all watching the exact same shows, and but everybody loves different women and hates different women. Mm. And so, you know, mine is just my opinion about who I love and who I hate. And people want to either agree with me and be like, oh my God, Brian always knows exactly what I'm thinking. Or they want to disagree with me and be like, Brian's always so wrong. He's such a fucking idiot. But like, either way, it's like a conversation that we're having with each other. And I think that that's like really the great part about the Housewives fandom, is that it is a lot of really intelligent people who are really into this thing. And we have lots of different opinions, and a lot of those opinions are all valid at the same time, as crazy as that may sound. As long as your opinion isn't that you like Teresa Giudice, like I'm like fine with whatever opinion you have.
That's all right. We're in alignment.
Okay. Phew. Safe space.
Well, I think what's so interesting about it is you mentioned production and this idea that we've broken the fourth wall on these shows. Yeah. And routinely you will refer to the fact, or the Housewives will refer to the fact, that they're on a show and that the show is causing, you know, the very idea of the show is causing conflict. You also yes. have this kind of departure from that sporting analogy, in that there is interplay between the audience and the sort of outcomes. You mentioned yes. in the book this idea of triangulation.
Yeah.
Can you
and
talk
it's
about kind how that works?
Yeah. So it's and what's really interesting now with reality television in this kind of age of social media is that we're seeing the thing, we're watching things on television that we've already seen play out on social media in some way, whether we know these people are getting divorced, we know these people are getting together, we know her business is going to fail, you know, we know these two now hate each other, whatever. And so you're trying to triangulate, you know, what you're seeing on screen, what you're seeing on social media, what these women are saying on Watch What Happens Live, like the kind of after show for The Real Housewives. And you're trying to take all these different things and find out what the truth is, or figure out someone's motivation, or see where the conflict really lies. And, you know, like you said, and I always say, all the fights on the show are about the show, really. And so you're trying to figure all these things out together. And, you know, I talked to scholars from my book who argue that makes us better media consumers, because we're interrogating what we're seeing and what we're reading, and trying to put that all together to figure it out, as opposed to even when you're watching the most highbrow of dramas, it's kind of more of a passive experience where you're watching this one thing and kind of figuring that out. Whereas, you know, we're so superior. Yeah, we're taking from all these different sources. I don't know what you drama people do.
I love that. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the book. So last year? No, 2021, you published The Real Housewives, the real story behind The Real Housewives. Where did the initial seed for the idea come from?
It actually came from, I was moving to London about 5 years ago, and someone had recommended me this book, Bachelor Nation, which is about the Bachelor franchise. And that was not one of the reality shows I was invested in, but they were like, this is such a good book. I know you love reality, whatever. So I read this and it was a great book. And I was like, this is amazing. Why has no one ever done this about Real Housewives? And, you know, like I landed and I got an email from a friend who was like, oh, I have a friend who's a book agent and she has an idea she wants to talk to you about. And I was like, okay. And it was the agent of Amy Kaufman, the woman who had written Bachelor Nation. And she was like, I want to do Bachelor Nation, but for Housewives. I was like, oh my God, I had the exact same idea. And so that was, yeah. So, you know, we put together a book proposal and, you know, shopped it around and it sold more quickly and for more money than we thought it would. And yeah, and it kind of went from there.
Now, you made the decision, and you talk about this in the book, to tell the Bravo network, and Bravo are a really big thing in Housewives. You made the decision to tell them that you were writing the book. How did they respond?
At first they were, you know, I had always had a very warm relationship with Bravo. And so that's why I wanted to tell them, because I didn't want to spoil that for, you know, access reasons. And they initially were warm and were kind of like, oh, maybe we can collaborate, blah, blah, blah. So we had some discussions about it and they said, okay, we'll set up all the interviews you want. We'll, you know, do everything. We'll help you promote it, whatever, but we want 10% of all the sales and we want full editorial control and control over the marketing. And my editor was like, you're fucking crazy. And so they like called every Real Housewife and producer. I'd sent them a list of people I wanted to interview. So they just emailed everybody on the list and were like, don't talk to this dude. So yeah, it ended up making my projects really difficult. And it's funny because I you know, I'm known as like a recapper and kind of a funny writer, I think. And, you know, my audience and myself included often forgets that I am an actual journalist and I did spell people's names wrong on their obituaries and learn from those mistakes. And, you know, yeah, so I had to put my reporter hat on and, you know, really pound the pavement, start cold calling people and developing sources. And oh my God, it was so much hard, so much more work than recapping. Oh. Let me tell you, real reporting.
But some housewives did appear in the book. So did some were contractually able to talk to you or?
So all housewives, even former housewives, when they get asked to do interviews about housewives are supposed to ask Bravo's permission. And so even a lot of the women who were off the franchise have hopes of coming back at some point. They want to go on Ultimate Girls Trip. They want to be in Bravo's good graces. And so, yeah, they wouldn't talk to me or they would only talk to me off the record. But I got a bunch of them who most of them seem like I'm done with this chapter of my life. Mm. I'm ready to move on. And so they weren't afraid of Bravo. And I talked, one of the women I talked to, Anna Kikosa, who is a Real Housewife of Miami, she's a lawyer. And she was like, yeah, like this NDA they have on me isn't binding anymore. I don't care. I'm just going to do it. And so thank you, Anna, for all of your hard work and determination.
One of the things that I found really fascinating about the Real Housewives show, which seems completely obvious when you know it, is that the women try out to be on the show, which is extremely obvious if you think about it for 1 second, but seems like a surprise.
Go ahead.
Did you know that the whole way through or was there a point at which you also discovered that?
I knew that the whole way through. I think that I wasn't quite sure of the process. And, you know, and I think what was interesting about the book was a lot of the things that I thought going into it were confirmed by my research, but it was nice to know the particulars and the ins and outs. But what I think is interesting is you see that there are housewives who have been trying for a really long time to get on the show. Someone like Jennifer Aiden on Real Housewives of New Jersey apparently was like actively trying to get onto the show. And Noella Bergener from Real Housewives of Orange County was another one who was like trying to get on, had all these friends on, was talking to producers, you know, trying to make it happen. And sometimes those ladies are great, like Jennifer Aiden, and sometimes they're awful, like Noella. And so I think that what's interesting is sometimes the best housewives are the ones who are a little bit reticent, like Carol Radziwill, who's like, okay, I'll see what this thing is. It, you know, it'll be a fun little lark. And then they do it and they show up and they're a little bit more authentic than some of the women who show up and they're like, I'm going to be great on this show. I'm going to bring the drama. And So yeah, so I knew they tried out, but I think what's really interesting is that I learned that the casting producers are looking for people who they almost need to convince to be on the show, and because that usually ends up with better results.
And one of the biggest insults on the show is kind of ironically when a housewife will say to someone who is often new to the show, "You've been trying out to get on, or you've been trying to get on this show for ages."
Yeah,
he's like, the
or they'll say, "You're shade. A fan. You're a fan." Like, yeah, and that's especially for the women who have been there from the beginning. And I think that you watch a lot of new reality shows, and you see the people cast, and they feel like they know what their role is, or they're really trying to bring it because you're like, "This is my shot to be on reality television." Whereas in the early days when Housewives started, it was women who were like, "Let's try this stupid thing. No one will probably see it. It'll be like cute and we'll have some good stories." And I think that the women who did that are often some of our best characters because they have just always been themselves, and they're not trying to be anyone or trying to bring it for the show. They're really just living their lives and letting us see it. And so that's why someone like Countess Luann is still a great housewife, because she didn't come into this to be a reality show. She just came into this being like, you know, "I'm bored. My husband's rich. Let's give this a shot." And, you know, thank you for your sacrifices for the reality television arts and sciences.
Gender is very central to Housewives, also to the book yes. that you've written. And you cite the yeah. analysis of two pretty high profile people. One is Gloria Steinem, who hates Housewives. Yes. She says it's a minstrel show for women. The other is Roxane Gay, author of Bad Feminist, who likes the Housewives. It can be seen as divisive, whether it's good for women, whether it's bad for women. Where do you land?
I land on that it's, I don't want to say good for women, but I will say like it is at least net neutral for women, if not maybe good for women. But, you know, yes, there's lots of drama and there's, you know, it's showing women in, you know, as quote unquote housewives, and you go into thinking they're going to be in this subservient like 1950s, you know, idea of what women are like. But I think that there's a big difference between housewives and real housewives. And these are women with jobs and women with families and women trying to have it all. And so it's very different. And so I think that even that idea of housewives kind of under of real housewives undercutting that idea of what women's roles should be, I think is really interesting. But I also think that for better or for worse, there are very few depictions of women in this age cohort interacting with each other. And, you know, on a show like Real Housewives of New York, most of the women have either been divorced or widowed, and they're single and they're in their 50s and they're going through that together. And I think you're not seeing that, excuse me, you're not seeing that in movies, you're not seeing that in scripted television. So this is the only place you're getting it. And I mean, that audience really responds to it. I mean, that's who most of the fans of Housewives are, is, you know, middle-aged women. But also there are a lot of young women, a lot of young gay people, and you're seeing the authentically produced real lives of, you know, a group of women who otherwise are often invisible in pop culture.
It's so interesting how it works in both ways, even thinking about this idea of it promoting beauty and thinness.
Yes.
Which it does on the one hand, but on the other hand, you see the cost of that in terms of financial expense and time and effort. So it's quite a nuanced thing.
No, absolutely. And I think that what, you know, makes it real. And I remember, you know, using this example when I was writing about reality television kind of earlier in my career with like gay people, where, you know, the winner of the first season of Survivor was Richard Hatch, who was a gay man, you know, open, proud, and, you know, he won the big prize, the biggest audience in American television history, you know, whatever, watching this gay dude like win. And unlike gay characters on television, you could say, oh, it's just a character, he's played by a straight actor, it's not like really, he's not really gay, it's fine. Like, you can't deny that Richard Hatch is gay, and that visibility, I think, you know, not just with Richard, but with all the gay people we got in the early years of reality television, I think really made a big difference in getting people to accept gay people, want to push for gay marriage rights, things like that. And I think that the same is, it can be true of women for the Real Housewives. Like, you know, yes, it's like making people confront these notions that they have of this, and you're watching this and saying, should I be this thin? You know, whatever. And I think that now we're at a really interesting point, you know, just to talk about thinness, where we have some housewives who look more like normal women and who are of all body types, and women who have talked about their eating disorders and their children maybe having eating disorders and things like that. And so I just think that being able to have those conversations is really helpful for a lot of people, and makes you kind of, yes, they're like, oh, look at, we're all rich and thin, but they're also like interrogating why they are, what impact that's had on them, all that kind of stuff. And I try to touch on that a bit in the recaps, but like at the end of the day, as I like to say, keep it cute and cunty, you know, we're here to have a good time. Yeah.
One of the things that you talk about in the book that I found really interesting is soap opera. And you say that the Housewives TV show uses the visual language of soap opera. What do you mean when you say visual language?
I mean, like, soap operas are made so quick and dirty, kind of like reality shows are, that, you know, it's like you'll have two women in conversation, you get shots of one woman, and then the reactions of the other woman, and, you know, them back and forth in conversation. And it's a much more intimate way of making it. And also, you know, you have these group scenes where you have these more group dynamics kind of happening when all the housewives are together. You have these like parties and soap operas. And so it's a lot of the same tropes, a lot of the same kinds of storytelling. And, you know, I went back to some of the earliest radio serials that were, you know, considered soap operas. And it's like women talking about what they're going to wear to a party. And that's like exactly what we have on Housewives, where it's like women, you know, talking to their stylist or their friend or their husband, like, which dress? And so it's really just a continuation of the same thing. And I was a huge soap opera kid growing up, and I know a lot of Housewives fans were really into soap operas. Erica Jane, who's on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, her mother was a huge fan of Erica Kane from All My Children. And that's why she named her daughter Erica. So I think that, you know, there's that through line, you know, even with the participants on the show, and that, yeah, these are kind of our new soap operas. But like I said, you know, the difference between drama and reality is, on a soap opera, the reason why a character did something is because the writers told them to. Whereas now, it's like you're getting kind of the same stories about relationships, home life, work life, you know, much more, you know, I don't want to say feminine style of storytelling, but what a lot of people would consider more of that, things about, you know, personal stories in the home, as opposed to I'm a big man and I'm going to go conquer the world. So yeah, we're getting those same stories, but through a kind of reality lens.
Also, just that idea of like the building of tension by having people before an event, you know, if there's tension between
absolutely
two, and having the discussion between one side of the fence, and then the you know, that very clever way of, because it's a very small thing just to have two characters talking, but to look at the contrast.
Well, and they also love to do a thing on Housewives that they do on soap operas, where they'll be like a scene between two enemies and they're both talking to their best friend, and, you know, they're both describing the same fight and they're describing it differently, and they intercut kind of between the two. And like, you'll see that on soap operas, and you'll see that on Housewives. And so it's really just like all the same stuff. And, you know, Mary Ellis Bunim, who started The Real World, which, you know, many consider to be the first reality show, got her start writing soap operas. And so it's not unintentional that this is where reality television came from. And you look at, you know, Laguna Beach was an answer to The OC, which was a drama show, and The Real Housewives was an answer to Desperate Housewives, which is you know, a drama show. And you're kind of, you know, moving this all from scripted into reality, and taking a lot of the same stuff along with it, or the same kind of ways of telling stories.
There is this curious thing too of being able to borrow those devices, but there is this real life thing that we do where we exaggerate certain aspects to further our own kind of position in conversations with other people. But they have this ability in reality TV shows to roll the tape and to go back and
present
something, which is such a, as a viewer, such an interesting addition.
No, absolutely. And now that we are, you know, 16-ish years into the Housewives phenomenon, you know, with the women who have been on the shows a long time, they have years and years and years of stuff. And the editors will do that. They'll be like, I've never been drunk in my life. And then it's like roll tape and it's like 17 scenes of them falling over, you know? And like, yeah, it keeps them honest. And, you know, speaking of soap operas, one of my favorite Housewives ever was Eileen Davidson, who was a soap opera actress. She was on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And there's this thing where the Housewives would be like, oh, you said my husband was a jerk. And they're like, no, I didn't say that. And then they, you know, roll the tape and it was like, not quite that, or they're mishearing it or whatever. And but Eileen Davidson had to do soap opera scenes, you know, for 30 years, remember all those lines. And she had like a memory like a steel trap, and she'd be like, you said that my husband was a jerk. And then it would roll the tape and it would literally be her being like, your husband's a jerk. Like, she was the only person who could ever like accurately remember what happened. And I like love that. But yeah, I mean, it keeps them honest. And now you'll hear the Housewives say in a scene, like, roll the tape, like, roll it, bring it back, show us, you know, what happened. And yeah, and that's what's crazy is that, I mean, I think it speaks to the fact that these women really are living the experience somewhat authentically, in that they're forgetting that the cameras are there and have recorded them, you know? And so they're just kind of living this out. And yeah. And then they get called on it. And I heard from a lot of the Housewives, you know, filming it is hard, but then watching it back is even harder, because then you're seeing it again. You're seeing your castmates' reactions to it. You're seeing how the production has packaged it and how, you know, fans are going to see it. And it's like, you know, if it was a traumatic event, it's like reliving your trauma again, but through this kind of outside lens. I don't know, it must be crazy. I'm glad I'm not on reality television. Well, just
even hard enough watching yourself or hearing yourself on TV, let alone these layers of filters. One of the things that the Housewives has given us is the art of the apology. There is a particular type of housewife apology.
And my husband and I literally call them housewives apologies, and it's like, I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings is like a classic housewife apology. Like, I'm not going to apologize for the thing I did, but I'm going to make an apology so that we can move past this. And I think one of the, you know, there are some things from the book that really stuck with me and that I always think about and that have really shaped the way I see Real Housewives. And one of them, one of the producers told me that it's a show about conflict and conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. And the best housewives know that, and know that you can't carry a grudge for forever. I mean, you can, but not for the show. So it's like, you at least need to pretend to get over something, because especially it's like, it must be weird to look at your life in seasons where it's like, oh, last season, Candy and I were fighting, but this season we're friends, you know? Mm-hmm. And like the compartmentalization that must take must be crazy.
I do think there's something really nice in that forgiveness sort of element to housewives, and the best ones do move on.
Whereas no, absolutely,
it's very human to hold a grudge.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the way I look at most of them now is as coworkers, in that it's like, we need to get along to move this project forward. And so it's like, how can we negotiate that? And like, how can we be okay with each other so that we can all keep being successful? And when you get to a point where that breaks down is when, you know, one or the other ladies needs to go, or someone needs to get fired or something like that. But yeah, I think that that's the best way of looking at it, especially a show like Real Housewives of Potomac or Real Housewives of New Jersey, where the cast hasn't changed that much, at least over the past few years. Like, these are women who, even if they didn't know each other before, have been involved in this very intimate thing for a number of years together. Like, of course they're bonded and have intense dynamics. And that's what we really want to watch. You see reality shows where they throw a bunch of crazy strangers together and it's never as good as Housewives. And I think that that's part of its special sauce.
It's true. Brian, fandom is a very big part of Housewives, but you also have a lot of fans. What is the nicest thing a fan has ever done for you?
Oh, I mean, I just love when people come. It happened to me this past weekend. I was in Italy with my husband and, you know, we were at dinner and a woman came up. I was like, oh my God, I recognize your voice. I thought I knew you from somewhere. I read all your stuff. I love you. You know, it's just like great to hear that. And then I always, you know, ask people's names, ask who their favorite housewife is, talk about our things a little bit. And it's just like having those interactions with people. And just, I mean, I always say Housewives fans are the best fans in the world. And it's really true. Like, they're smart, they're nice, they're fun. They like to party. I mean, so I just love just getting to chat with everybody about Housewives. And I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, if you're an attractive gentleman in a gay bar who approaches me to talk about Housewives, like, I'm probably going to hit on you. So, I mean, that's worked out more than once. So thanks, Housewives, for everything. But I call what I do kind of jokingly the Real Housewives Institute. And there was a Facebook group of fans and they called themselves the Docents and Benevolent Society of the Real Housewives Institute. And so I told this to my friend and my husband, and they called themselves the DABS, which was like Docent and Benevolent Society. And so my friends and my husband started calling them the Dweebs. And so that's like what we were. So it's like, oh, who's Brian talking to? Oh, some dweeb. That just means like some fan of Brian Moylan's. But yeah, my niece, who is 15, says that I'm a niche internet micro celebrity. And I'm like, oh, girl, whatever kind of celebrity I can be, I'll take it.
So there's lots of nice things about fans. I've asked what the nicest thing a fan has done. What's the weirdest thing? Have you had any?
Oh, my God. Yeah. So this one is recent. And one of my like favorites is there was a woman and she was posting on all of my social media accounts about like, Brian Moylan is canceled. He's ableist. He says all these awful things. Everyone on Twitter is talking about how ableist Brian Moylan is and was like commenting on all these pictures on my Instagram. And I was like, what is wrong with this woman? But also like, did I say something ableist? Like, I'm, you know, open to, you know, my faults as a human being and learning and growing, et cetera. And then finally I read one comment and she was mad about a recap I'd written about a recent episode of the Real Housewives of Miami where Adriana DeMora sprained her ankle and all of the housewives and myself thought she was faking. And so I wrote my recap, like, you're faking this broken ankle. You're crazy. And this woman was like, you can never know what pain other people feel. And you discounting her pain is akin to eugenics. And I was like, lady, you're okay. This is way too far. Like, I will not accept that I am ableist based on saying Adriana faked her sprained ankle. I mean, even the producers were like, bitch, you faking. So
I do think they rolled the footage on that one, didn't they?
Yeah. So yeah, you get some like crazies out there, or, you know, there are plenty of people who like want to disagree with me all the time or say that my opinions are stupid or, you know, and it's weird. I shouldn't say weird, but you know, I am a cisgender gentleman and I'm talking about, you know, women and, you know, criticizing women and, you know, hopefully I think fairly for their behavior, but yeah, I get accused of being a misogynist a lot and, you know, things like that. And, you know, I do pay attention to that. And I know that as a product of a kind of misogynistic society, like there are things inside of me that are not going to be great when I'm looking at these shows. And so I try to be open to people's criticism, but also a lot of it I take with a grain of salt, because I think a lot of people just like disagree with me. And, you know, you could just say like, Brian's wrong. I'm fine with that. But, you know, am I wrong because I'm a misogynist, or am I wrong for some other reason? I mean, you know, I'm willing to interrogate that and discuss that with you. My God, I just called myself a misogynist on your podcast. I'm sorry. To women everywhere, I love you. I love you. I do.
Now, Brian, I know you have to go shortly, so I'm going to go to our last question. We have a lot of listeners to the show that are writers. What is either the best or the worst writing advice you've ever been given?
Oh, my God. I mean, I took so many poetry workshops in graduate school. I'm sure I got tons of bad advice. But I mean, I think that the best advice is that good writers are good readers, and that to just like read a lot and see how people are, you know, why do you like this thing? Why is this successful? What are they doing? And, you know, the other great advice is, you know, good poets borrow, great poets steal, you know, and then just like seeing how those people do that and being like, okay, I'm going to do that, but like in my lane, and I'm going to bring like my stuff to it. And yeah, and I just think that like keep writing, you know, and eventually it'll get there. But oh man, writing is the worst. If I could just watch an episode and then like beam my thoughts to the computer, that would be perfect. Mm. But, you know, sitting there and fun.
I think what we like is having written, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I've been writing these recaps for so long now, and, you know, I'll talk about something that happened seasons ago, and so I want to link to the recap and I'll go back looking for it, and I'll have to kind of dig through them to find the episode, and I'll read, you know, and it's like every one I turn in, I'm like, this is shit, this isn't funny, you've lost it, you don't know what you're doing anymore. And then I go back and read the old stuff and I'm like, good job, Moylan, that is an excellent joke, I do not remember writing that, but spot on. So that's what I try to remember when I'm writing, is that even if I think it's shit at the moment, hopefully somewhere down the line, I will appreciate my own brilliance.
That is a lovely note to end on. Thank you, Brian Moylan, for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.